CBSI in the world. I'm John Batchelor. Ukraine. The debate is how much and how soon can Ukraine have advanced weaponry? The debate has gone on for months and months, and each time it seems to end with what was held back is now being shipped. However, I welcome Josh Rogan, writing global opinions for the Washington Post, who visited with Ukrainians recently in Europe. And what he learned is alarming about the pace of armaments flowing into Ukraine, not just ammo, but armaments that can take the fight to the Russians. Josh, if I understand correctly, the Ukrainians in the first year have stopped the Russian advance. But in order to advance on their own, they need more. More of what, Josh? What do they talk about? Good evening to you.
Well, good evening, John. Last weekend, I traveled to Munich, where the Western intelligentsia and chattering class had assembled to celebrate a year of standing up to Russian aggression. And they had a lot of things to celebrate. They celebrated the fact that Kiev was still standing. They celebrated the fact that NATO was still together and even growing. And they celebrated the unity amongst the Western allies in confronting Vladimir Putin. The only problem was the people that weren't celebrating were the Ukrainians. And several Ukrainians who I met over the course of these 4 days in Munich, quite the contrary, were expressing deep desperation and dread about not last year, about what this year, about what's about to come. They survived and they are fighting valiantly, but the Ukrainian people are suffering greatly. And what they're facing now is that they're being armed just enough to fight to a bloody stalemate in the east. And that even that bloody stalemate is cracking not in their favor, because Vladimir Putin has recruited hundreds of thousands of more Russians to throw into the pyre as cannon fodder, and the Ukrainians simply are outnumbered and outgunned. So, you know, imagine you're Ukrainian, you don't want to be the skunk at the party, but at the same time, you feel obligated to ask all of these Westerners who are busy celebrating your success whether or not they're willing to keep going. And what President Biden and Vice President Harris said while they were traveling in Europe this week was, we'll help Ukraine as long as it takes. And what the Ukrainians said is that's the wrong message, because the longer it takes, the less Ukraine there is to save, and their economy is shattered, and there's no electricity in most of the country, and the people are tired and desperate, and the military is suffering heavy losses. So they want to speed up the effort, not settle in for a long slog. And what they need to do, that they say, first of all, the long-range missiles, so that they can hit the Russians before they get to the towns to rape and murder everybody. Next, they need the air defense, so that all the missiles that are coming in from the Russian side, they have a reasonable chance of shooting most of them down. Next, they need tanks, because after the offensive, that if they are able to stop it, then comes the counteroffensive, and they need armor to push through that. It would be nice if they had some advanced drones to watch over the tanks, and then the fighter jets. The fighter jets won't come anytime soon, but if we don't start now, it'll just take that much longer. So, you know, there's just a deep, deep depression amongst Ukrainians I met, and about the failure of the West to realize the urgency of the moment. And I think that as we head into this next fighting season, we're going to see that this thing is not over, you know, and Putin still has a few cards to play. We ought to put some more cards on our side of the deck.
There was a message in your conversations that you quote in your column that the Ukrainians who have been fighting this war are worried about public support in America and in Europe. Do I read between the lines correctly, Josh?
Yes, that's right. I mean, if you talk to Europeans, the support for the Ukraine war in those democracies is low. And if you talk to Americans, the support for the Ukraine war in our democracies is relatively high, nevertheless, going down on both the right and the left. And as people like President Biden and Ron DeSantis start to polish up their campaign speeches, you can see their incentive to wrap this thing up politically, but at the same time, to tell the American people that their investment of time and money is coming to an end somehow. The problem with that is that our vision, and in other words, the Biden administration's vision for how this ends and the Ukrainian vision are not the same. The Ukrainians want it to end with all or most of their territory in their hands. And the Biden people are giving them just enough weapons so that they'll never be able to make that happen. And, you know, the Biden administration likes to say, oh, well, it's up to Ukraine to define what winning means. But if they're hampering their options by withholding the stuff they need to actually win on their terms, well, then it's actually a de facto policy of pushing them towards negotiations, which they don't feel ready to enter. And anyway, the Russians are not willing to yet entertain.
Several days past, the Secretary of State, Mr. Blinken, made a remark about Crimea as a red line. Did you hear that from the Ukrainians, that they were being warned not to attack Crimea? Did they heed that?
The Ukrainians are very careful about criticizing the Biden administration because it's literally biting the hand that's feeding them. But at the same time, it's clear that there's a gap between their desire to take Crimea and the Biden administration's desire to not put everything into that. Not every egg into that basket. Now, what I say is that even if the end result, or at least the ceasefire result, doesn't include Crimea, it makes sense to have that as part of your negotiating position. And it's really bad that Kyiv and Washington can't even get on the same page publicly, much less privately. So, you know, in some sense, it's a very paternalistic thing. We're like, oh, we know better than you, Ukrainians, what's good for you and what you should want, and what you shouldn't want, what compromises you should make. But at the end of the day, it's their country. And if we believe in their sovereignty, as we profess to, then they're going to be the ones that decide what's worth fighting for and what's worth dying for. Right now, that includes Crimea, and we have to respect that.
Preparing for a long war, the United States and its allies in the West, psychologically and politically. Does long war mean the day after the 2024 election and then it ends, Josh? Are we looking at an entirely political calculation, long war?
Right. Not entirely political, but heavily political in the sense that when President Biden starts to run in earnest for re-election next spring, what will the war in Ukraine look like? Well, if you're in the White House, you're hoping maybe there'll be a negotiation, because then that means the violence will be down and people won't be seeing little children get blown up every day on their TV screens. But if you're the Ukrainians, that's really a nightmare scenario. They're trying to say to the White House, don't you want to run on winning this thing? Wouldn't that be the best campaign ever? But the Biden administration doesn't believe that that's possible, at least not this year. But, you know, every year that this goes on, the Ukrainians say the more any victory becomes a Pyrrhic victory, because without an economy, without infrastructure, without all of these people who are dying, what kind of Ukraine will there be? What kind of Ukraine will there be for millions of refugees to return to? Not much at all. And so, you know, every year that goes on is really a deep and saddening loss for the Ukrainian people. So they don't want to hear as long as it takes. They want to hear, let's get it done now.
Since the Munich conference, the People's Republic of China has brought forth a peace plan. We all anticipated that they were going to start with a ceasefire. I take it that the Ukrainians regard that as a non-starter, correct?
Right. The Ukrainians are in a tough position. Zelensky can't afford to tell Xi Jinping to pound sand, so he has to accept him. They're probably going to have a meeting and pretend to go over this. What's funny is that the Chinese peace plan was rejected by Moscow already. And, you know, when Wang Yi went to see Vladimir Putin in Moscow, he said they didn't even discuss it. So that should tell you all you need to know about the seriousness of this peace plan. And then when you add that to the reporting that the Chinese are inching closer to, or may have already crossed over the line of providing lethal weapons to Russia, well, that's pretty hypocritical, isn't it? You know, to be pretending to be a negotiator and neutral and then doing something secret that you won't admit to in terms of arming them. At least we're being open about which side we're on. And so I think the, you know, Chinese Communist Party's attempt to mediate are a kind of a false flag. It's a ruse. It's their propaganda to convince us that they're conflicted about the Ukraine war while they continue to and actually increase their support to Putin for his murderous rampage.
Josh Rogan, just back from the Munich Security Conference, his conversations with his Ukrainian colleagues over the last year, beginning in the second year of war. Josh Rogan writes global opinions for The Washington Post. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.
You're listening to CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.